Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on King of OX.
Back at it as we roll on. It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. 1 hour down, one more to go. Our good friend Kevin Wheeler, former host of this very program, now part of the Dave Glover Show. He joins us for our weekly Friday conversation in about 20 minutes or so, 20, 25 minutes. So he'll be with us. And then I'm going to discuss something later on this hour, and I like to discuss things where I have all the information, because I think when you talk about things that you don't know a lot about, sometimes you don't sound so smart. That being said, I'm just going to go all in. And I read today over at STL Today that Vashon High School is not going to allow full attendance at basketball games for safety reasons. And I've got some strong thoughts on that, and I'll share those with you coming up later on this hour. I've been thinking about this a fair amount recently. So I am as bullish as I think you can like potentially be without being like out of your mind on the Cardinals' chances of being better than we think that a lot of people think they're going to be this year. I have a positive attitude about them. I do think there's a good chance that Jordan Walker takes a step forward. I do think there's a good chance that Nolan Gorman takes a step forward. I'm not crazy. I leave open the possibility for that not happening. And if those things do not happen, it could go bad and go bad quickly. That's on the table. So I'm not this like crazy, irrational person that's just trying to make everything look amazing and wonderful. There is a very legitimate scenario that could play out where things just do not go well. I don't think it's going to play that way out. Again, if it does, I'm not going to be shocked by it. I think it's going to be better than most of us, than a lot of people think it's going to be. But this is where that conversation leads me. Because I think internally the Cardinals believe the same thing. And they have said publicly that, you know, well, the idea of we're going to be better than people think we're going to be. Okay. But that's kind of as strong as it's gone. You know, they have not really set high expectations. And rightfully so, because, again, there is a very viable path towards things going very poorly for the team. And I'm not running away from that whatsoever. But I think they probably think the way I think, that, you know what, there's a good chance that you're going to get more from Walker. You're going to get more from Gorman. There's going to be value in them being in the lineup every single day. There's going to be value in the work that they've already done with Brant Brown, that these things are going to end up being good. That starting pitching is going to be solid with a nice 1-2-3 of Gray and Fetty and Pallante. And we'll see what ends up going after that. But here's my question that I have been internally debating. Because the team, earlier in the offseason when we were talking about, you know, reset, reboot, whatever, reword, any reword other than rebuild, that's the word that was never used. Ever since that happened, there's been a lot of discussion about giving the kids runway and opportunities for younger players. In reality, even if they trade Nolan Arenado, which I think they will, even if they trade him, Where is really the opportunity for like super young players to get a huge opportunity at the big league level? Nolan Gorman's been a big leaguer for a few years. Even Jordan Walker has big league time each of the last 2 years. Now they're still very young players, especially Walker. I'm not trying to tell you that they're not, but it's not like you're going to have these guys who are coming up from AAA making their major league debut and you're just going to hand them a starting job. That's not what's happening. In many ways, from a position player standpoint, it's not going to look a whole lot different than it's looked previously. If you move Arenado, you're going to get some more time with Sejacy in there. Obviously, the catching situation with Páez and Herrera, but that's what the catching situation was much of last year, as Wilson Contreras was injured. So that doesn't really change from last year, except now that's the plan, and last year it was the necessity. So where does this reset go in terms of impacting the major league team? And this is what I've been thinking about a lot lately. And what I'm curious about on the way that the Cardinals are mentally preparing for some possible scenarios to play out this year. And how they play, their win-loss record, their ability to stay in contention for a playoff spot, it absolutely does impact this. So it's hard for me to even venture a guess on what they would do, because it is, I think, so largely dependent upon some you know, external factors as well. But what if Quinn Matthews is awesome for the first month of the season at Memphis? We're talking 2.5 ERA, and maybe first couple months, you get past that June 1st date where you're able to, you know, get the club control for an extra year and all that sort of stuff that, you know, teams like to be able to finagle with, and you get through there. And all at the same time, Miles Michaelis is pitching to his 5 ERA that he's pitched to the last couple years. You're not trading Michaelis. He's got a no trade clause. He's not gonna, you know, get rid of it. Is the organization going to be at a point where even, you know, what's he, like $17.5 million? I don't have the contract. It's a lot of money. Miles Michaelis is owed a lot of money. Are they going to be able to, on June 1st, say, this Michaelis thing isn't working. Matthews looks great. We're going all in on Matthews. The implications of that be darned. We're gonna eat the Michaelis money, and we're gonna go to Quinn Matthews. If JJ Weatherholt is just awesome 3 months into the season, 4 months into the season, and it looks like he is every piece of a big leaguer, are they ready to make that move right then, right there, no matter what the cost might be in terms of the player that you have to move on from? Now, a lot of these things will figure themselves out, because you have injuries and things like that. When we talk about the starting rotation not having room right now for Michael McGreevy, that's probably going to work itself out, because very rarely, you know where I'm going, I say this a million times, very rarely do you walk out of spring training with the 5 projected starters. Right now, the 5 projected starters for the Cardinals, if they were to play, if opening day was tomorrow, and everything was the way it is right now, the rotation is Gray, Fetty, Pallante, Michaelis, Matz. There's no room for McGreevy. Now, in all likelihood, one of those 5 guys, maybe more than one of those 5 guys, won't be available on opening day. Last year was Sonny Gray, who missed the start of the season. Like, guys missed the start of the season. It's a very common thing for starting pitchers to have issues. But they in a year where you're trying to figure out what you have, it doesn't really feel like right now the doors are open, and things can change. And I'm internally curious: are they ready to kind of go to the next era of Cardinals baseball right now? It worked well for Mason Winn. Mason Winn was given a job last year. I know he got a little bit of big league time the year before, but he wasn't overly impressive, especially from an offensive standpoint. They gave him the keys to shortstop, and it worked out pretty well for him. Now, they had a contingency plan. That's why they went and got Brandon Crawford. And I've always argued that Crawford actually played a little bit better than people feel like he played. When you look at his numbers and some things, there's a way to look at it. But still, he wasn't needed. He was an unnecessary piece on that roster, and eventually they made the decision to move on from him. Are they going to be willing to make the decision in season this year to move on from guys? If a starting pitcher is struggling and you've got Michael McGreevy and maybe Gordon Graceffo and certainly Quinn Matthews ready to go, are you ready to just wash your hands? You can't trade Miles Michaelis, you get rid of him. Maybe you can't trade Steven Matz, you just move on from him. Are they willing to do those things this year? setting yourself more up for 2026 than 2025 because it's the opportunity to see those guys pitch every fifth day in the big leagues. Are they ready? If J.J. Weatherholt is looking good, are they ready to hand him the keys to second base at some point this year? If Tink Hintz is just, if he gets to AAA this year, and I could be wrong on this, and I know the Cardinals continue to talk about Tink in terms of being a starting pitcher. I still have a really hard time seeing how he makes the jump to being a big league starter right away when you look at his innings. He was around 75 this past year of innings. His season before, I think he was at 97. That's a career high for him. He has not thrown the amount of innings that you need a guy to have thrown in the minor leagues to feel like he can be a starter. So is there a scenario where you get Hintz up and you just put him in the bullpen and it costs somebody else their job? Are they willing to make those decisions with the young players to give them opportunities in 2025 that more than anything else is going to set you up for 2026? If they're not very good this year, it actually makes it a pretty easy decision. If you're 15 games under 500 and you're 10 games out of a playoff spot, you don't need to run Miles Michaelis out every fifth day. You just don't. It's the same situation with lot of other guys. There's not a whole lot of value in that. But what would be interesting is, what if you're playing some pretty good baseball? What if you're right there in playoff contention, right there in divisional contention, right there, but you've got some veteran pieces that are not performing the way you would like them to perform, and some of these young players, who it might be a little early for them if we're being honest about it, but in a year where you talk about runway and in a year where you say you need to learn about your young players, in many ways it would be logical to bring those guys up. Do they get that opportunity? And I think that's going to be one of the things that I'm really looking out for this year. We'll see how it all plays out for sure. But I do think it's worth mentioning. Just keep an eye on this for tonight. We'll see if anything happens before all is said and done. But this Ryan Pressly thing really seems to be picking up. Different insiders are reporting Cubs and Tigers, and that the Astros have gone to Pressly to see who he would waive his no-trade clause for, whether he'd be willing to go to the Cubs, whether he'd be willing to go to the Tigers. If you stay with the Astros, so if you don't invoke your no-trade clause, you're the setup guy. You don't get to be a closer. If you go to the Cubs or you go to the Tigers, you're going to make less money because you have to pay more state income tax, but you're going to get the opportunity to be a closer. And no matter where you're at, you know, Houston, Detroit, or Chicago, you're going to be on a team that has playoff aspirations. All three of those teams have aspirations to be a playoff team this year. So I'll be curious to see how that plays out and where Pressly would rather go. If they've got deals done basically with Detroit and Chicago, if he would rather be a Cub or if he would rather be a Tiger. Up next, we're going to talk with our good friend Kevin Wheeler. We always do a Friday conversation with him, kind of looking back at the week that was in the baseball storylines. Wheels is going to join us coming up in just a moment here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Great Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we do start to wrap up this Friday edition as we get into the final half hour of the program. It is our Friday tradition, our Friday conversation with our good friend Kevin Wheeler, former host of this program. You hear him on the Dave Glover Show, and here he is right now. Hi, Kevin.
Sup, bro?
How's it going?
I don't know why I said it like that. Everything's good, man. Everything's good. Heading into a good weekend.
You're not really a sup, bro.
No, guy. I'm definitely not, no. Which is why I was more done ironically. And then I realized how dumb it sounded.
That's all right.
Yeah.
So it's been a week where we have spent the week talking through the narratives that came into existence during winter warm-up. And then nothing really has happened beyond that. I still think it's really interesting. And it's been talked about ad nauseum on this show and on this station and everywhere. But I continue to think that it's a really big deal that John Mozeliak said that they no longer feel the pressure to reduce payroll even if they don't trade Nolan Arenado. And that could mean a few things. It could mean that they actually really think they're just going to get this Arenado deal done and it's a way to appease fans. It could just be what it is and doesn't mean anything more than that. It could mean that they really feel like this team has a chance to be better than everybody's talking about. But I feel like there's something underneath that statement from Mo.
Yeah, I would agree. Maybe it is a feeling that you kind of know what it'll take to get a deal done with an approved team, right? With an Arenado approved team, and just haven't gotten to that point yet where you're willing to concede as right. much as you might need to concede. Maybe it's that. Maybe it is just they've had more time to get their hands around what the financial situation is going to be, and they realize, okay, we're going to be fine, and we don't want to gut because there's not that many places to save money, man. I mean, you know, you could try to move Steven Matz. I'm guessing they've tried, and I'm guessing they've not had very many receptive offers. That would be, them not eating money. I'm sure they don't want to eat money on that. I know they're very fond of starting pitching depth, which I understand. But I do wonder if they should stop talking about maybe being better than you think. Because the reason I say it is this. I think they should think that. I think that should be a part of their thought process. Because it's possible. We've talked about the scenarios yeah. where they could be better than they were last year, and it wouldn't be crazy to see it. But, and I want to put this the right way, it's not going to sell tickets. No, you're not selling more tickets because a fan base hears you say, well, we might be better than you think.
Right.
The people will buy more tickets if they see it. Right. This is a fan base that's used to a message that is, we're a contender. We're working to make the playoffs. That's how we roll. And I don't think, though, and I could be completely wrong about this. I've done zero market research, but I've been in sports radio now in December. Next December will be 30 years for me in sports talk radio. I have talked to I don't know how many thousands of sports fans on the air, off the air. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone say that they bought tickets based on off-season messaging.
No, never.
You're buying based on what you've seen happen. So when you've seen the Cardinals contending, yes, that's going to lead to excitement in the off-season. That's going to lead, it wasn't that long ago, man, where the Cardinals announcing their packages, their 10-game packs and their season ticket packs and the different promotional things was like a big deal.
Right.
Because people were dying to get their hands on it. Well, you're not going to sell anybody on any of those things with the message that, hey, we might not be so bad. So maybe just don't go there. Because I know we talked about this a bit during the week on the Gas House Gang. We being you and me, but also just the group of us. That sometimes what gets the Cardinals in trouble is messaging. It's not always what they do. It's not always what they spend. Sometimes it's messaging, like saying things that you don't need to say or saying things that people that are sports writers, that are sports radio hosts, that are fans are going to see and they're going to remember it. And then they're going to be like, you said this. Why didn't this happen?
Yeah.
And this is not an egregious thing like right now, like the whole, we might be better. But if you're selling everybody on a reset, that message conflicts with, well, we don't want to do anything that'll really undercut our ability to compete. And because it's not that you're doing a tank. We're not talking about a tank job. You want to be competitive. But really, if you traded one starting pitcher, really going to change your picture that much?
Not much.
Especially when you're talking about.
Unless it's Sonny Gray.
But especially when you're talking about. Right, right. And I don't think it should be him.
Right.
I'm talking more of the Steven Matz, maybe Eric Fetty. Right. But Fetty's good, so I understand wanting to give yourself that chance to all right, we get into June, we're not that bad. So I get that, but I'm not sure that should outweigh achieving the other goals that we've talked about, clearing paths for younger players to show you. Because the more you know, using the rotation as an example, the more you know about Gordon Graceffo and Michael McGreevy and eventually Quinn Matthews, the more you know about those guys at the end of this year, the better off you are to actually turn around and become that contender again under Heim Bloom.
So you said a few things there that I want to get into. First off, I agree with the messaging has been interesting, but even if you get into
what's being said not directly. So when the announcement is basically made that they don't have to make another move if they don't trade Arenado, and the idea was out there that, well, if you don't trade Arenado, you have to move on from Helsley, you have to move on from Fetty. There was almost this reaction from the organization of, like, that's just silly. Why would we ever move on from Eric Fetty? Why would we ever move on from Ryan Helsley? What are you talking about? That would not be good for the organization. So to me, I think that right there is a more powerful statement of an organization believing that they're going to be at least respectable this year, as opposed to them going out and saying the whole, well, we might be better. Again, it has nothing to do with tickets. It has nothing to do with any of these things. But when they sit there and say out loud, we think we might be better than the outside world thinks that we're going to be, something in my head says, do they believe that? Or
I think they do.
Or are they trying to sell tickets? When they balk at the idea of trading Ryan Helsley, we're obviously in the middle of a reset, a rebuild, whatever you want to call it. Trading Ryan Helsley would be fantastic for the organization for future purposes. When they act like that's the craziest thing in the world, I think that carries weight as an organization believing that they're going to be all right this year.
So I think I don't remember if it was you or Bernie or Tom when we talked about this on Monday. No, it's Tom. The real big reset is with how they're doing business in the player development system.
Sure.
Like, that's the big reset. And the stuff at the major league level is more of a soft reset. It's not a massive change, right? It's going to be a couple of spots different. So if you trade Nolan Arenado, it's like two guys that are different from last year, right? Two spots. Goldschmidt's gone and Arenado's gone. So maybe the new guys are, you know, Pajes and Herrera while Contreras is also playing. And then, like, Sejacy sliding into the mix. But, I mean, Gorman's been a regular. Donovan's been a regular. Newt Barr's been a regular. Obviously, Jordan Walker would be the one that's going to be the new regular. He's not a new guy, but he's the new one where they're like, okay, we're going to let him play. We have to let him play. We got to stop with this nonsense of, you know, sending him down every time he has a bad month. So there's not a, it's not like it's a dramatic changeover on the roster. And, again, I do think they can be better. I don't think it's crazy.
No.
I don't think it's crazy at all because you have Fetty all year. You know, he's better than all the other guys were last year, maybe outside of Palante. I don't know exactly what Palante is. He may be what he was last year. He may be a little less than that, but I know he's probably going to be near there. You know, I don't know what Miles is going to be. I don't know what Matz is going to be or if he's going to be healthy. We don't know what McGreevy will look like when he's in there. And those are the things you're going to need to sort through. The bullpen's largely the same, minus Kittredge, but it's the same other than that. And the lineup, as we pointed out, is kind of the same, depending on which way you go on a couple of decisions. So is it crazy to look at that and say, well, if you have Contreras healthy, he doesn't have a broken arm when he's catching. If, you know, if Nolan Gorman is just what he was in 2023 instead of what he was for, and again, you know, he was only bad last year for about 28 games.
Right. He was just really bad.
He was just really bad. Yeah. Yeah. It was basically a zero for the Lions score for a month. It was really bad. And I know some of the reason they sent him out was just because he was mentally struggling with it. Not as much, not just that you got to go work on things. But what if Jordan Walker's just fine? What if he's an average major league hitter or maybe slightly above average? All of these things, you could be better because that's what Arenado was. He was only about an average hitter last year. Goldie was only a little bit better than average. So it's not like you can't replicate that. You definitely can. I just wouldn't want to talk about it too much because I think it conflicts a little bit with what you just said is kind of the longer term picture. So as an example, if everything goes well, boy, you're going to really be happy that you have Ryan Helsley.
Yes.
Because that's going to help you win games. So if you get to June and July and you're like, man, we're only four games out, we maybe add a piece because we can do that. And he's our closer. We've got this awesome closer, and then we can do the QO if we want in the offseason, which is a lot for a closer, but, you know, for 1 year, not the end of the world. But what if his elbow barks at him in spring training? And you end up getting to the point where, like, yeah, we're not going to get anything for him.
But you know what? I would put that under the same category of what if Nolan Gorman looks exactly the same way he did for his final month? And
except that you would be trading Helsley if you did. You're not going to, but if you traded him this offseason, you're trading him at his peak value because he's coming off a great year. It's a full season for a team. And again, too late in the process to even think of it now. But if you were talking about that 2 months ago, you'd probably get a hell of a return. You'd be trading low on Gorman.
Yeah, but my point is, you're going to get nothing for either one of them in that situation, and I'm not going to be bothered by either.
Okay.
That's the point that I'm trying to make. That it.
I think there will be some people that will second guess it. I probably won't, because I get it, because there's also the chance that his value could be higher at the deadline. If he's having another great year and somebody's desperate, somebody's like, man, we can win the World Series this year. We need this guy.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the return for Devin Williams, and like I think the Brewers did well.
I thought so too.
For where they're at.
Right. They wanted a starting pitcher, and they got
one. So they were able to accomplish things that they did. So this is not me trashing what the Brewers did. But if you're going to put a value upon the total package received for Williams, and whether you want to convert that total value to prospects if you're trying to trade Ryan Helsley as opposed to some big league guys, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more for Helsley than what the Brewers got.
Yeah, I mean, if you were shooting for prospects, you would have gotten more. I mean, you got a major league pitcher when you're trying to win the division who can help you do that. And they already know that McGill can close. He just did it for most of this past season and, you know, kept you in contention. So it is fascinating. And I mean, you know, we're only a couple weeks away from spring training now, so we're going to start getting answers pretty soon.
So here's my conspiracy theory.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if I believe it.
You got your foil hat?
Yes, I do. I don't even know if I believe it, but I'm going to throw it out there, throw it into the universe. So when, you know, John Mozeliak obviously said at the winter meetings, our intention is to trade Nolan Arenado. Then he tells us on KMOX a couple weeks ago, a few weeks ago, we thought we had a deal done. Probably was the Houston deal. Might have been something else.
Right,
we don't know.
Probably that.
Probably was the Houston deal. And Mo also said, you know, if I knew then what I knew now, maybe I wouldn't have said it that way. Well, what has he said since then? He said on stage the other day, intention number 1, 2, and 3, or plan 1, 2, and 3, is to trade Arenado. So my conspiracy theory that I'll throw out in the universe is that the Cardinals basically have the framework of deals done with multiple teams that are in on Bregman, and then once Bregman goes somewhere, there's going to be some teams left over, and the Cardinals are very confident that they're going to be able to move Arenado in one of those spots.
I think that's probably correct, and in tandem with that, I think it's probably also true that if they don't have frameworks for agreements in place, I think they probably know what it takes to get it done.
Sure.
They know how much money they would have to agree to eat to get a deal done.
Why would you say the 1, 2, 3, you know, plans 1, 2, and 3 when you've already said, maybe I shouldn't have said that the winter meet. Has to be more there.
I mean, and also it's plan one, but plan 2 and 3 could be those other minor things you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and there may be some players that get left behind where you can get some good deals. You know, I mean, like, look at last year as an example. This guy's not going to be the specific guy. But, like, last year, the Padres snapped up Jurickson Profar right before spring training for $1 million. Like, there are going to be some players out there that you can get super cheap that don't have jobs that maybe they add to your bullpen. Maybe you find that. I don't know where that right-handed bat is they were talking about, but maybe you find one of those guys. Maybe it's an Austin Hayes. Maybe it's an Austin Hayes who's looking for an opportunity to get at-bats. I don't know where you get them here because you're just jumping into a mix where we're already trying to clear at-bats. But like the point is, I think there's a chance that that comes up too. But those would be more plans, you know, 2 and 3 after one. But one is definitely moving Nolan.
They're going to sign a relief pitcher who's going to be a high-leverage guy.
I would think, at the very least, like somebody that would be like where Kittredge was last year, which was, maybe there's a question about something. Maybe it's health. Maybe it's whatever. But because that was what it was with Kittredge. He had been hurt the year before most of the year. So it's why he got the one-year deal at a moderate salary. And I'm sure it'll be something similar in structure.
Speaking of question marks, and I really like JoJo Romero, but I think there is still a bit of a question mark on him because
stuff really changed at the end of last year.
It did. So first half of the season was incredible, then fell back. I think it was due to usage, so hopefully they use him a little bit less.
I mean, if you look at the first half,
every day it seemed like it was out
there. He and Kittredge were like on pace for like 80 appearances.
Yeah, which you can't do. And he went through a lull. They didn't use him very much. And then he kind of popped back up at the end of the season. But even things like his strikeout numbers never completely recovered.
No. I think that's a legit worry. But, you know, he's not super expensive. It's, you know, he's a guy you definitely want to find out about. Because when you got lefties that can reach, you know, 96, 97 miles an hour. And, you know, he does get the ball on the ground a good bit. Mm-hmm. If he can just get back to missing the bats again, Like he did the first half of last year, that's a pretty good asset that you might end up trading at the deadline.
Yeah, really good asset. Kevin, always good to see you.
All right, appreciate you, buddy.
That's Kevin Wheeler. Of course, be tuned in. The Gas House Gang, Kevin and I are part of it, along with Tom Ackerman and Bernie Miklas. We do it live every day at 12 noon across the KMOX sports social media channels. We'll come back, wrap up the program in just a moment. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap things up on this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. I'm going to do something here that I don't like to do very often. When I listen to other things or watch things on TV, one of the things that irks me is when people speak on things that they're not super educated on, and I always try not to do that, because my goal in all of this, I can say dumb things. I realize that, but my goal is to limit the amount of dumb things that I say, and I try to do that in large part by only talking about things that I have a little bit of an education on. And I saw something on the STL today, and I haven't really been able to do a deep dive on it beyond reading the article that's posted. So I actually thought long and hard today about whether or not I wanted to discuss this. But the optics of something and just the fact that something has to happen, it really bugged me. And this is involving Vashon High School. So Vashon High School basketball, once again, as they tend to be, are very good. And St. Louis Public Schools, the officials at that school have decided that they are going to limit the number of people and really the type of people that are able to attend varsity basketball games. And the decision was announced yesterday. It's going on right now from what we understand. So what they're doing is only players, coaches, referees, and parents are allowed to attend basketball games at Vashon. So siblings, and I read in part from this Post-Dispatch article, which was written by Blythe Bernard, who covers the, she's not a sports writer, she's an education reporter, and there's been a few things here in the last few months with St. Louis Public Schools, with the busing and the superintendent stuff and the credit cards and all that sort of thing. She's been busy. She has been busy covering St. Louis Public Schools. I don't think she had it on her bingo card that she was going to essentially become a sports reporter, but that's where she's at. So, according to her story, with this ruling, siblings, other students at the school, and college scouts are all unable to attend Vashon basketball home games. And the reason that they're doing this, is very warranted. Very warranted. They're doing this for safety reasons, because there have been fights and some other things. They referred to it as a difficult decision in a statement, but there were fights at a basketball invitational that was held Monday at Cardinal Ritter, there were no arrests in it, but that led to some things here as well. All right, so I've got a few thoughts on this just based off, and if I've got something wrong, you can text into the program or let me know on Twitter or something, but I'm just going based off the information. I appreciate the decision makers being worried about the safety of the student athletes and just trying to avoid any type of violent behavior. That is a good motivation. I want to start with that. The motivation for this decision that they made is a good motivation. The decision is made in the interest of safety. Okay, cool. That's what you did. I understand it. I'm not trying to be completely, albeit a little bit, completely dismissive of that. There has to be a better way. There has to be a better way. And we can say this about a lot of things that happen, unfortunately, in St. Louis, sports and beyond, where you just get the sense that the people who are making the decisions don't get it. Don't get it. And I'm not proposing that they just open up the doors and let whatever happen, happen, because everybody should be able to come watch a basketball game. I'm not being dismissive of the safety concerns. And I'm also not being dismissive of the fact that you're probably very limited in how many St. Louis police officers or whatever you use can be there when it is well documented that that there's not a lot of police officers out there, right? Like, so I'm not being dismissive of that either. But you got to do better. You got to do better. Sports are so often the front door of any institution, whether we're talking college sports, whether we're talking prep sports. The experience of extracurricular activities includes being able to play a Friday night basketball game and have a packed gym and have that environment going for you. Like, that's an important part of the educational process. And I know this is a sports show. I know it is. I realize it. And maybe I shouldn't be talking about this, but I am. That's an important part of the educational process. I've always believed very, very strongly that athletics, very few of these kids, and maybe for Fishon basketball, this isn't true because of how good they are. But in the grand scheme of things, when you talk about high school athletes, very few of these kids are going on to play sports after high school. And an even smaller percentage are going on to play sports after high school at any level of significance. So you got these kids who are going to practice every day. They're staying eligible, so they're doing all right from a grade standpoint. They're probably doing better than a lot of the other kids at that school. They're doing everything that they need to do. And now you, as a St. Louis public school, or you as administrators at Vishon, wherever this decision comes down from, you're going to make the decision to take away the experience of athletics and everything that goes along with it. Again, I realize you got to keep the kids safe, but there's got to be a better way. And it's not my money, but if you got to go get private security, go get private security. Find a way to pay for it, right? You got no problem spending money on your credit cards to upgrade your flights to first class and to stay at high-level hotels and do all these things that the people in the administration of St. Louis Public Schools have been doing for a while and they're looking at. You're doing all those things. How much is it actually going to cost to go get some private security and bring it in so you can preserve a really good high school basketball team being able to play in front of fans? And don't even forget the fact that, you know, college scouts, things like that, they can't come in. How much does it stink if you've got a kid and their younger brother or their younger sister who really looks up to them can't go watch them play basketball? Like, this is ridiculous. This is one of the dumbest things I have ever seen. And it shows the problem somewhere that instead of being creative, instead of being forward-thinking, instead of realizing the importance of this, you just, you know what, let's make the easy decision and let's just close it off to everybody. We'll just close it off to everybody because we're not going to take the time, we're not going to take the effort, we're not going to spend the money to find a way to make sure that it can be a safe environment. You can't keep a high school basketball gym safe. You can't keep a high school basketball gym safe. Somehow, some way. What does that say about you? What does that say about you? I'm a little fired up about this one. It really bothers me. It just really bothers me because I'm a big believer in the experiences of athletics. No matter what level we're talking about, the experiences of athletics, and anytime those experiences are messed with, I get upset. And I'm upset right here, so shame. Shame. Shame on St. Louis Public Schools officials. Shame on the folks of Vishon High School. Shame on everybody involved in this decision. shows absolutely zero outside the box thinking and absolutely zero effort to fix the problem. You're not fixing the problem. You're just closing off the problem. That's dumb. That's dumb. Let the kids play basketball in front of people. This is not the thing that should be going away because you don't know how to keep things safe. That's all I'm saying. And on that happy note, that's how we're going to wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. Certainly appreciate you being with us this evening. Don't go anywhere. We've got the Gas House Gang on the way next. You get more of me. Today it's me and Bernie Miklas on the show. So that is up next. And have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you again coming up on Monday for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.